Hello, friends. Welcome to another program of Two Guys with Heart, with Giff Briner and Dave Colonen. These two fine Christian gentlemen will do their very best to bring encouragement to your faith. We all undergo difficulties throughout our lifetime. How do we respond, and what is the correct direction that we should take? Giff and Dave will give it their best shot to guide our lives through the work and words of Jesus. And now, here they are, Two Guys with Heart.
Good afternoon, friends. Hey, it's Giff Briner here. Another good program of Two Guys with Heart. We have some very good material for our listeners, me and my good friend
Dave Colonen.
Dave and I are going to bring you an exciting program. We did something a little different yesterday, a little casual and relaxed and laid back. And I think I want to pursue that thought process again. You can put your pen and paper down. We usually encourage you to take notes, and we're going to share some scripture with you and some powerful thoughts. But today, we're going to ask you just to relax and listen carefully and see if we can't help shape your idea to how to become more powerful and how to pursue great people and how to surround yourself with great people and find the difference that it makes in your Christian life. Yesterday we talked about building people like our own Mount Rushmore, whether it be physical people or if we find spiritual people in our lives that make a tremendous difference. And the idea, of course, is to surround yourself by intelligent people, hardworking people, dedicated Christian people early enough in your life that it will make a difference. Because, how can I say it that as clear as a bell? How about if I say, birds of a feather flock together? And those people that you associate with, you'll start to mimic them, and you'll think like them and talk like them. And that's just the way it is. You want to pick up a southern accent, you move down south, you'll sound like them in a short time. You'll look like them, you'll sound like them. So you want to surround yourself with great and positive people that we live in to be a more solid Christian. I call it looking out the windshield. When you look through the rearview mirror, you reflect on your Mount Rushmore of great influences. Okay, well, we have all accepted that. We talked a lot about that yesterday. But you have a better idea of who you want to pursue next. You can look out the windshield and see that God's people has replaced your horizontal knowledge, that he puts some of them there to help mold you into the person that you want to become. A professor once said something that I'll never forget. He says, hey, Giff, everyone needs a Paul or a Timothy and a Barnabas in their life. You know, a Paul is to learn from as a mentor or a role model kind of person. A Timothy is to sow seed into the next generation. He teaches and he's an encourager and that kind of a person. And a Barnabas? What's a Barnabas? Well, you can be totally open with a Barnabas, an encouraging friend who will go through life with you and in the good times and in the sweat of the heartaches as well. Someone who will keep you in a balance. That's not a bad way to think of what it means to pursue great people. You see, you need to have role models, and you need to be one. These relationships don't always need to be long-term, and they don't always need to be formalized. Variety is not only acceptable, in fact, it's advisable. I have one Paul who has a doctorate, and another one who's only a high school education. Great people don't fit into a box. They often stress your expectations. In fact, you aren't necessarily looking for someone who's famous or popular to see his or her life and the kinds of things that make you think. In my heart of hearts, I want to grow in that area. So become a Paul or look for a Paul. I learned from a guy what devotions looks like. I've never met a man with more sensitive to the Lord. Every Thursday night, when he was in town, he went out to share Christ with people. This is my Paul, who had visited the church. One night, we were talking with a woman who understood the gospel, but showed no desire to commit to Jesus. I don't like rejection. No one does. And I was ready to move on to the next person. But I watched my friend, a very large man with a black belt in judo, as tears began to stream down his face, he turned to the woman and said, "You need to understand that the decisions you're making is a decision for a Christless eternity. And of the God of heavens who loves you and gave his son for you, you're rejecting. I just want you to know that he loves you and he gave his son for you. And I want you to know that you're rejecting him and what the consequences are for your rejection. And I want you to know that we love you." You see, my friend taught me what it means to speak the truth in love, even when it's uncomfortable. So as you meet someone who might reject the Word of God, you have to let them know that you love them anyway. Later, we had a very sticky situation in the church that involved a sexual indiscretion and a man living a double life. And it required a real church discipline. My friend and I were responsible for confronting the man. We had all the substantiated information, and we knew the truth about the situation. But it's hard to be courageous in cases like that, especially as a young pastor, as my friend happened to be. It's easy to say about 90% of what needs to be said, and then encountering resistance, what do you do with the other 10%? Well, you let the conversation end without a total resolution. And sometimes that's the only way out. David, have you met these kinds of people in your work as a pastor over the years? I would imagine you found quite a few examples like that.
Our church started a Wednesday evening program for like 10 or 12 weeks, and then we do one in the fall, and then we do one in the spring. When the pastor announced who was going to take care of one of the sessions on prayer, and I hadn't taken any time with the man who's I heard was going to be the speaker. So when I went to church, there was a lot of classes, and I just went by all of them, and all of a sudden I was in this man's class. And he opened up and began to talk, and the longer he talked, the more I respected him. And I thought, wow, what a great guy's in our church. Been sitting there. I've been here 11 years, and I don't know how long he's been here. It's been 11 years, but he is a remarkable person who knows the Word of God. He's memorized so much of it, and he had so much to say that I was, man, I'm in my sixth week of going. I wouldn't miss on Wednesday night for anything. It's amazing what people will do in front of you and prove to be great. You know, just recently, I have a car in my garage. If you ever come to my garage, I have a car I drive every day, and then there's another car sitting there. It's a 1977. Ooh. It's a 77. What's that? Oh, that's a long time ago. And it hasn't started.
40 years ago.
It hasn't started in 23 years. Been sitting in my garage for 23 years. Every time I get in my garage, it's in the way. I yell at it. I said, "Man, get out of my life. I don't need you. It's going to cost a fortune to get you going. I don't know where to start. To get this car." You know, a man came to visit me. I took him out and said, "What's that?" I said, that's my old car. Won't run. He said, "Well, hey," he said, "I love to work on cars." He said, I'll come here every Tuesday and I'll work on your car for you for free. It won't cost you a penny." I said, you kidding me? Guy wanted to fix it the other day and wanted $50 an hour. And I said, "It'll sit for another 23 years before I pay $50 an hour to get it fixed." And this man has been coming to my house every Tuesday, and he takes 2 or 3 hours and is working on my car. We had to order a harness out of Europe. It took us like 3 months to get it. They had to make it.
Wow.
And this guy took totally in charge, did the whole thing, got the box. And I sit in my garage and watch him work, and I just... You can't imagine how your life changes when you see people that are willing to do something for free. And I mean, they know me from Adam. I'm on staff at the church, but it's not like we're bosom buddies, but we're getting there.
Oh, yeah, you are now.
I mean, last night we were there, and he didn't get much work done because we talked. We're getting to know each other. We're getting to become friends. And he's going to be a great person to be able to listen to him, and to, he listens to me, and he's got some problems with his life like we all do, and we can all help each other. Great people that come out of the woodwork that you never dreamed possible. Uh-huh. I never would have thought that I would have gone to a class on prayer and hear a brand new person that I had not been around.
How about that?
And to sit out in my garage and look at that car that hadn't started for 23 years. It looks good, but it's bad.
And he restores automobiles. We have to bring him in here and talk to him about restoring automobiles. That's a wonderful idea.
Anyway, that I'm the recipient of great people.
Isn't that wonderful?
It's just the beginning of all the things that have happened to me, that great people came up my driveway and knocked on my door. And when a guy builds a house for you for free, he's a great person. His wife and his wife are great people.
He's on your Mount Rushmore.
I just looked at Judy the other day and said, you know, this is the beginning of 17 years in this house that we have lived for free.
Wow. That's amazing.
Wow, that's great. That's great people.
That's great people.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I could go on and on, probably talk all day just about the great people that have come into my life.
Yes. Yeah. You have you've had some wonderful exposures. I think of Holmes Williams. I think of Neil and Dwayne and your friend the pilot. Oh my goodness! I know a lot about your personal life. You're just truly great and wonderful people.
Well, you push me to talk about it.
Yeah,
and you eke it out of me.
You know what that reminds me.
But I'm willing to talk.
I remember my trip to Barbados, and you talking about great people. And I was told about the Mrs. Williams. I forget her first name. What was it?
Rosie,
that's it, Rosie. And, you know, as I mentioned to you, most of these people in Barbados, all those native citizens are black. So if you meet a white person, well, it kind of stands out. So I was kind of, you know, looking for this lady that I know was Rosie. She was the leader of these people down there, Rosie Holmes. And finally it happened. I was introduced to someone, said, this is Rosie. This is the lady that is in charge of this church area. And she'll be helping you throughout this week that you're here. And I looked at her and I said, Rosie. She's looked at me and said, yes. I said, well, I have a message for you. She looked at me and said, what did Judy say? All I said to her was, I have a message for you. And she knew very well that it was from Judy Colonin. I had never met this lady before in my life. So Judy and Rosie really had a connection. They had to be very, very close for her to say something like that. And I was extremely impressed that she was able to say that. And sure enough, my message was from Judy to say hello to Rosie. And I found out later on that they were the very, very best of friends, the way you and Holmes were. And I'm stirred by that. Here I am thousands of miles away in the West Indies, in the middle of a place that I had never heard of before, talking to people that I had never seen before. And here I found some warmth and compassion in somebody else's Mount Rushmore. Boy, that means a lot to you.
Like you knew her for 30 years, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Instantaneously, now she was my friend now, and she had two sons, and they became friends as well. And that time that we were there together was quite meaningful. They were extremely helpful, and they understood these people from the USA coming down and sharing with them and helping them. And boy, I was quite stirred by that visit. That was all because of your tips that you gave me about the people in Barbados. So.
Well, I wish that I would have been with you because when I went to Barbados, I knew nothing about the ocean and except going to Ocean City and and sitting on the beach for a day. But now I lived on a little island that I went to the ocean every day.
Yeah.
The pastor finally said to me, he said, I'm getting a 14-foot boat. And he said, I'm going to teach you how to fish in the ocean. Well, the boat came and it was really little. Ocean was rough. Yeah. On days when you saw white caps, you don't want to go out there on that little boat. He taught me. He said, "Look, what we don't want to fish with a line and a hook. We want to get a big cage."
Big cage.
And so we got
catch big fish.
Yeah, no, this is for little fish.
Oh, you just got a lot of them, huh?
You got to put it down, take it out, and drop it down 50 feet on the bottom of the ocean, and then go back a couple of days later. And if you baited it, then it would be full of fish.
Oh, okay.
And we ate every Saturday fish from what we'd caught. And we did that for like 3 years. We caught a lot of fish. And I learned how to put the glass bottom boat and glass bottom box down on the water, and you could see the ocean.
Yeah.
And you couldn't put a marker because somebody would come and steal your fish. I'd guide the boat with my head down in there. And I, having never been in that kind of a situation with standing on your head out of a boat in the water, yelling at him, left, 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 no, 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 too far, too far, go right, 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 back up. Hey, that's it, right there, just straight in.
That's how you found your net, your box.
Yeah, and Holmes was great at teaching.
Uh-huh.
One day I had some guests, and we had about six guys come from one church to visit Barbados and visit me and Judy.
Uh-huh.
And they all said, "Hey, what do you do for fun?" I said, "Well, we fish." He said, "Well, all of them. Oh, we want to go. So the next day, I looked out the window and I could see white caps. And that's the only day they had to go to fish.
My.
Fishing. You had to go out about at least a mile, mile and a half to get to the cage. And so I said to Holmes, "It's white caps." He says, "Well, we can't take those guys out there."
Yeah.
And I said, "Holmes, let's try it. Maybe it won't be so bad." And he said, "Okay, your deal." We got all five of those guys, and Holmes and I in that little 14-foot boat.
Oh, my.
When we got out there, it was rough.
Oh, my.
And it looked like we were going to turn over and capsize. I said, "Holmes, I don't care how bad it is. We got to go home."
Yeah.
Turn this boat around. Boy, he said, "You can't just turn it around. The waves are coming. The first one, if you don't sit right, it'll
knock you over.
Yeah, it'll all be under."
Yeah.
And so I said, "Well, these guys were saying, hey, well, I need a life jacket."
Yeah.
We didn't have a life jacket on the boat. Come to find out, none of them could swim. They were out on a lark, and they didn't know how close to death they were coming.
Oh, my. Yeah.
And Holmes finally, after a long 15, 20 minutes to turn the boats very carefully around, head for shore, I said, "Holmes, we're never doing that again.
Yeah.
If you ever call me, I'm looking out the window, and if it's white caps, we are not going."
Yeah. Yeah.
Those guys came home. They didn't even know what kind of a fishing trip they went back on. They could have just killed them.
Almost died out there. Yeah.
They didn't even know it.
Wow.
So we learned some big lessons, but we never did get life jackets. We never did get anything to help us.
Yeah.
We went out there empty. And great people.
That's great people.
You learn to trust great people.
That's right. You know something? That's what our message today is all about. How do you live with these people? Who is your Barnabas, and who is your Paul, and who is your Timothy? Who is your people on Mount Rushmore, on your Mount Rushmore? And you have cited some excellent examples of who these people are and why they're so important in your life. Wouldn't our lives be so much different without that? And that's the point that I'm trying to make today. I want to encourage our people to make certain that they surround themselves by strong Christian people who have very valuable, positive beliefs in this good old world we live in, and that their life is a witness day in and day out. You don't have to hear it, you see it. And those are the kind of people that I want to associate with. And I have to confess, my Barnabas is a guy named Dave Colonin. Yeah, you have left a major impact with me.
At least you're willing to listen. If you're you're willing to listen. I told you, if you don't ever want to hear that, those stories, just say so. Say, Dave, hush.
No,
And you know what? You're the biggest encourager that I have that gets me to be thinking about the past.
Yeah.
Man.
And sharing that with our listeners. You see, that's the whole idea between our program here, to be encouragers and help people through these storms. Many times we get to feeling sorry for ourselves, like, you know, we've had a bad piece of luck here and a bad piece of luck there. Our job isn't going right. The family isn't treating me right. And the church isn't treating me right. And we've all had some bad luck and some bad things that happened to us. Luck isn't the right word to use, but that's just life. It was true in one of those old cowboy movies. I forget which one it was, Tombstone, I believe, where they're talking about there is no good life or bad life. It's just life. I believe that was Doc Holliday's line, wasn't it? And that's true. That's just the way it is. All of us have these experiences. But if you surround yourself with good, godly people, there's a positive ending at the end of that rainbow in every case. You have your Barnabas, and you have your Timothy, and you have your Paul, and all of the other great biblical leaders that we've studied through our lifetime, and how much of an impact these people have on your life. You might find them on your job. You might find them in your church, in your Sunday school class. Could be your neighbor. Could be your family member. Could be a worker colleague. And it could be a well-educated person or no education at all found within these people. It's all walks of life, all kinds of people, and there is good in every one of them. And you have to surround yourself with the very best of the very best, the Timothy. And they will do that for you. And you have to be able to see that. And the hardest part is to avoid those negatives and those nasties, those that, like we were talking about earlier, who wanted to turn away from the Lord, who wouldn't accept the Lord, who didn't want to live that godly life. It's not always easy to avoid those people. If you work with them day in and day out, what are you going to do? So you have to be able to figure out how you're going to handle those kind of situations. David, once again, we've exhausted our time, and we have to say goodbye to our listeners. But we have certainly left them with a lot of encouragement today to think about how they surround themselves with and how they can rebuild their Mount Rushmore of fine people. Do you have any closing thoughts you'd like to say?
I do, because when you're living your life every day, watch who comes to your door. Watch who walks into your life. Those might be the great people of a lifetime. And you didn't even know it. You pushed them aside. You didn't jump in and say, hey, come on in, have a cup of coffee. You just, hey, I'm busy. I can't handle you right now. Those are some of the times great people walk in and out of your life, and you weren't good enough to see it. So I'm challenging you today. Just stand at the door and watch today who comes by and who wants to look at you and come into your living room. Accept them and watch the Lord do something so powerful it'll blow your mind. You walk away saying, wow, what happened? What happened right now? That powerful moment came my way, and I'm glad I took up and got a hold of it and said, yes, I'll talk to you. Come on in. Come on in. That'll change your life.
Dave, I thank you, my friend. You're not only telling people to surround themselves by great people, you're also telling them to be a great person and lead other people to a more Christ-like environment. And I appreciate that very much. Hey, it's Giff Briner here saying so long for now. We'll catch you next week.
All right. Me too. Dave Colonin here. I wouldn't miss it for the world. See you later. Bye-bye.